As I said in announcements, we do appreciate those who are visiting with us. We have a number of people with us this morning, and we have some family members or some of our own members here who are out also, so it kind of bounces out, I guess, as far as total numbers, but we appreciate you taking the effort to be here with us. If you would, we've been studying about the life of Jesus, and we're in that Matthew 26, 27 chapter that deals with the trial of Jesus and his death, basically what we're looking at. There have been, through the times of history, individuals noted for their willingness to betray their country or somebody for various amounts of money, often very little money. You may think about Benedict Arnold of our country, as he betrayed the Continental Army, betrayed the United States as they're fighting for independence, and really did so for mainly just because of ego. He got very little out of it. Or maybe think of people that are in positions of high intelligence and they become spies or start giving secrets away to other countries. And a lot of times there's not really much money involved in it. When you think in the Bible, we could find individuals that did much the same thing. Maybe think about in Matthew 19 chapter, a young man that's really not described to us much as far as his name. We don't know his name, but he's described as a rich young ruler. And as he comes to Jesus, he comes with an important question about what he need to do to have eternal life. And Jesus gives off a number of things to do based on, we would say, based on the Ten Commandments or the law of Moses as far as honor your father and mother and not exceeding your children. And the man at the end of it said, I've done those things. And Jesus says, the only thing you lack is simply sell what you have, all your possessions, come follow me. And of course, the man goes away sorrowful because it says he had great possessions. Or in the Old Testament, I think about Gehazi. Over in 2 Kings 5th chapter, we have this story told to us about Naaman, a leper, a general of the Assyrian army. And as he has leprosy, that a slave girl, a Jewish slave girl, in fact, tells his wife that if he just go down to Samaria, there's a prophet down there that can heal him. And so he goes to his king and is sent down to Samaria. And as you look over in 2 Kings 5th chapter, it talks about what he took with him. And that is, it says, with him 10 talents of silver, 6,000 shekels of gold, and 10 changes of clothing. Which would represent a good amount of wealth to give to somebody. And as he faces the prophet Elijah, that we have here this servant Gehazi, and really, when you read about Elijah, his name's mentioned quite a few times. And usually in a sense of, you know, basically being a good servant of this man, of the prophet of God. But when Naaman is healed and tries to pay Elijah that, Elijah says, no, I won't take a penny from him. I won't take anything from him. Just go. And as he's going back to his home, that Gehazi gets the bright idea of wanting some of that wealth, he goes and chases after Naaman and tells him a lie. Tells him there's been some service coming in that we can use what you have. And so if you go down around verse 22, it says, a talent of silver and 2 changes of clothing is what he received. Not much. You don't even stop thinking about it. And when he goes back to his master Elijah, Elijah asks him, what have you been doing? He said, well, you know, nothing. So I see what you've done. And Gehazi is struggling with the leprosy that Naaman had. Not a very fair trade. We stopped thinking about it. Leprosy for, was it again, a talent of silver and 2 changes of clothing. Well, we look here in Matthew 26 chapter. We find perhaps the best known person as far as selling out for very little is Judas. And as you read about Judas, we find in that 26th chapter, verses 14 through 16. It said, then one of the 12 called Judas Iscariot went to the chief priest and said, what are you willing to give me if I deliver him to you? And they counted out to him 30 pieces of silver. So for that time he sought opportunity to betray him. The reason for all this, and explained to us just a few verses earlier here in Matthew, is that Jesus at the household of Mary, Martha, Lazarus, And Mary takes an ounce of oil and breaks it and uses it to anoint Jesus with. In our Bible class, Steve made mention of the Star Wars and the scene where all of a sudden that Luke finds out that Darth Vader, his father, and I remember being in the theater at that time, and you hear the gasp of people like, huh? Walls thinking, I thought about, there are certain events happen in your life that kind of, you had that reaction. When I was working the election polls up in Owensboro, one time I remember, sometimes you have people that spoil their ballots. They mark too many places and the machine won't take them, or they mark a place and then they thought, no, you know, I'll vote somebody else. But they make it extra and then, you know, color in that oval, and then they try to get to the paper, go through the machine, and won't do it. And it's for your ballot. And I remember one lady that had done that, and she said, I don't understand why it's not taking a ballot. And I looked at her and said, well, because she had too many marks. And she was kind of disgusted with herself, and she just took it and ripped it in the hand. And I guess the look on my face was kind of like that, because she automatically knew she had done something really wrong. And I said, yeah, we can't throw this away. Every ballot has to be sent back in. What she had done, we had to, you know, just send in a form ballot then. But in one case, I know I had in my face that look of horror. Like, how dare you do that? Well, here with the apostle, whenever Mary had brought that oil, that's kind of what I see here, is that look of astonishment, almost surprise, and almost like, I can't believe she did that. Because the oil was worth so much money. And they all react the same way, it says. They all kind of, like, you know, this oil could be sold to get to the poor. But over in John, Philip, chapter 6, it says to us more about this. It says, talk about Judas. It says, Lizzie said, not that he cared for the poor, but because he was a thief and had the money box, and he used to take what was put in it. Judas was more concerned about the money than he was about Jesus. And as you go on, we find, of course, that as it goes out, man, the passage there in Matthew, when he says, goes to the chief priest, and he asks the question, what will you give me? What will you give me? And that's just to sell out Jesus. And said, they measured out to him 30 pieces of silver. I want to concentrate on that 30 pieces of silver. And that is, if you think about that, the importance of that, the significance of that, first of all, is the fulfillment of prophecy. As you look at it, the passage we had read for us a few minutes ago, in Zechariah, the 11th chapter, verse 12, it said, then I said to them, if it's agreeable to you, give me my wages, if it's not, refrain. So they weighed out for my wages 30 pieces of silver. When I read that passage, I think, now, that's significant for a number of reasons. One is, you notice there it says they weighed it out, 30 pieces of silver. We're used to a day and age when our money is minted. It's printed. It has official stamps on it. And a lot of times, in fact, when somebody gives me some change or give me some dollar bill or something like that, I usually don't, and you know, I make sure I get my money, but I usually don't look at it to make sure every quarter is actually a quarter. And, you know, every now and then, I don't know, you may have actually a Canadian quarter, or maybe a Canadian nickel, which is technically really not the same value as American nickel or quarter. Or, and I have not, if somebody gave me a $20 bill at the store, I don't look up and see, okay, does it have that mark in it, and take a pen or thing they do at the stores to make sure that's not counterfeit. I don't do that. You know, I'm just assuming it really is what it's supposed to be. Well, in this day and age, there wasn't necessarily as far as minted, as far as how much silver did the coin have in it. And there were certain standards of it, but there were times people would try to cheat. And so they may not have as much silver as supposed to be. So first of all, notice here that they were weighing it out to make sure that it's the right amount, which to me shows meticulous detail, attention to detail. Which again is consistent with this whole trial of Jesus and everything happened to him. Everything that happened to Jesus was not by accident, but was by design. Him dying on the cross was by design. The Jewish leaders wanted to kill him. That was their goal. Jesus went to Jerusalem to die on the cross for our sins. That was his purpose. And so they were weighing out 30 pieces of silver. Not only that, but also we think about that. You see, that 30 pieces of silver could buy things. And they say, okay, now, again, money is relevant to what it will buy. The value it could give us for something else. How much something is worth? How much do I need to get to do something? And people have different values on things like that. And so mainly thinking, what did 30 pieces of silver actually buy? And we know, first of all, that actually it can buy a field the very dead people in. There in Zechariah 11, chapter 13, as you go on, it said, and the Lord said to me, throw it to the potter that princely price is set on me. So I took the 30 pieces of silver and threw them into the house of the Lord for the potter. Now, if you're not, you know, kind of a little bit confused what that really means, but Matthew helps us out there, because go to Matthew 27th chapter and look at verse 6. And there it said, but the chief priest took the 30 pieces to the silver and said, it is not lawful to put them into the treasury because of the price of blood. And they consulted together, bought with them the potter's field of buried stranger's skin. So literally, that was enough just to buy this field here for people that were basically destined to be buried. That's one thing you could buy. That field of dead. The second thing, we got to mention this in our Bible class when we were studying this originally, and that is it could buy you a slave, or the price put on the head of a slave. If you look over in Exodus, the 21st chapter 32, it says, if the ox gores a male or female servant, he should give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. This whole chapter, Exodus 21st chapter, is really one kind of dealing with justice, if you would. And this is a chant, for instance, that says an eye for eye and a tooth for tooth. If something happens, this is to be the payment for. And so this was considered an equal amount or amount appropriate for a slave that had been gored by an ox. Which is really kind of fitting when you stop thinking about it, because Jesus came as a servant. He came as a servant of God upon this world. And again, you just kind of think about that 30 pieces of silver then wouldn't buy you a whole lot. A common ordinary slave and a field to bury dead people in. But you know what? People have sold out their companies or their families or God for a lot less than that. There's a story about a young man, a 38-year-old executive of a company. He was on the fast track of the company. And the CEO was about ready to step down, so he was kind of considered being aligned for that job. And they had a meeting with some of the top executives and some of the top stockholders to talk to him about, you know, the idea of the vision of the company. And that thing was going great. And then came lunchtime. And so he goes down to the cafeteria, and it's in the line of the cafeteria. There's two other guys behind him. He doesn't really pay attention to them, but as he's getting his food, there's patties of butter. I took two patties of butter and put on a tray and then took his napkin and put over it. And he went through the line and then he got and paid for what he had, but never uncovered those two patties of butter. And they saw that. When he goes back upstairs, he notices that everything had changed in that meeting, that the whole tune and attitude, everybody was different. And they told him that he was going to be fired. They don't let him go. Those two patties of butter that he was willing to cheat for still were worth 6 cents. 3 cents each. For 6 cents, he was willing to cheat this company. And they decided it wasn't worth it. You know, again, what is it worth? Well, let me tell you that as you think about the third piece of silver, let's think about the things that it could not buy Jesus. The first thing, it could not redeem Christ from death. And that is, as you read about this account, the question that we asked last week, and is always asked in our study about Judas and about what he did there, is why? You know, why did he betray Jesus? And there's all kinds of different thoughts we have, and I would agree that them probably are good thoughts, and that is maybe he was trying to hasten the coming of the kingdom. That Jesus expected there to be a physical kingdom, and he was simply thinking that he was going to help that occur by doing this. Others think the name is the idea that he recognized the power of Christ. He saw Jesus as he would heal people, as he would raise them from the dead, as he could feed thousands of people with just a few loaves of bread and a few fish. And he can even stop the waters on the sea as the storm comes in by simply saying, peace, be still. And he may have simply thought, there's no way they would be able to take him by force to do anything to him because he had this great power. And it may have been the case that he just really didn't think about what the outcome would be of this trauma, well, of his actions. There's a lot of times we do that. When people do things and you look at them and say, what were you thinking when you started this? How do you think it's going to work out okay? Again, those famous words of, I don't know, I just didn't think that would be what happened. Anybody think about that? You realize people do that a lot of times when they get involved in some kind of immoral activity. And the diseases that people get or unwanted pregnancy, the ruined reputation, the answer, what do you think is going to happen when you start living that kind of lifestyle? And they say, I don't know, I never really thought about it. Or maybe the person decides that to take that first drug. They take that pill for the first time, or take that injection for the first time, take that first drink. And we've all seen pictures of people that the before and after with meth and other type of drugs, and where before they're nice and beautiful and handsome and vibrant and strong, and afterward that they look like they were on death's door. And if you ask them, did they ever envision that, they would probably say no. Maybe in case Judas just really didn't think about it. But what we didn't know is that he saw that Jesus had been condemned to die. And then Judas thought they could somehow undo his deal with the devil, so to speak, his deal with the Jewish leader. So if you notice here in Matthew 27, verse 3, Matthew said, now Judas, his betrayer, seeing ahead, had been with remorseful. Now notice there, sorrowful. Some translations may say this, they repent, but they're remorseful, and brought back her piece of silver, chief priest and elder, saying, I sinned of betraying innocent blood. And they said, why is that to us? You see to it. Did Judas actually think that, okay, he could just stop everything, that by taking that third piece of silver and give it back to the leaders, that everything would stop right there? It didn't happen to him. He could not actually stop this from happening. And so you look at it and you think about the fact that, again, many people do not think about the actions. But the second thing is that Judas could not buy concern for Jesus' soul from his leaders. These leaders were religious leaders. And again, as he goes to them, he tries to undo this deal. And notice what we just read there. He takes a third piece of silver, and one of the response by it, what is that to us? You see to it. In other words, they were saying, we don't care. That's none of our concern about this. And so they really weren't concerned at all about his soul. They just want what they had determined to get, and that is the death of Jesus on the cross. And many times they can be surprised whenever they get involved in things, maybe the kind of response they get from other people around. No, yet in the Proverbs, the first chapter talks about a young man that Solomon was trying to warn him about some friends. I use that term very broadly here, but peers of his age that said, throw in your lot with us, and I'll tell you what we'll do. We'll go all, we'll steal, we'll chill, we'll rob people, and all of us here, and you'll just be part of us. And then so they decide to join in. Maybe like the young people at Boston Place that said, let's go in and shop with some, let's go take some that's blown to us. And then when they are the one that gets caught, what happens? Nobody else is going to stand by them and say that, well, we were with them, or we also did the same thing. Now, all of a sudden, you don't have any friends. They're all gone. And that's the way it is. The road of sinners is a lonely road. When you think about the prodigal son, as it talks about, he wasted all he had in riotous or prodigal living. You may notice that when he had nothing left, there wasn't anybody there to say, we'll help you out in him. It's all about self. We just have to keep in mind that a lot of people that will be your friend, but they're not concerned about your soul. Jesus found out that that piece of silver cannot buy the concern about suffering from the Jewish leaders. Another thing is, it cannot give Judas the pleasure God would provide. Judas honestly wanted their piece of silver. Now, what was he going to do with it? You know, what was actually the plans? What was going to Jesus' mind? We don't know. Maybe it was the idea of having their piece of silver would have been maybe more popular. Maybe it'll give me more friends. Maybe it'll just make me happier having more money. There are people like that today, right? If I had just a bigger paycheck, if I had, I'll have more friends. I just had a more money or better clothes or that kind of mentality often is seen. Materialism. It's seen today. And as you look at it, we find out that greed and covetousness offers us something that cannot dilute. And that is happiness. If you turn the Bible over to 2 Peter 2 verse 19, and you may notice there, 2 Peter 2 verse 19 says, while they promise the liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption, for by him a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. Sin makes us slaves. It brings us into bondage. Just found out that this was a bondage that's pretty hard to do with. You cannot buy any kind of concern or pleasure from that money. And I have also cannot buy Judas a clear conscience. Judas here, as I stressed there, that he was remorseful. And not only remorseful, but what's that? He takes the money and literally throws it at their leader's feet. You know, he's trying to get some kind of conscience solved right here. Something they could keep on thinking is okay. But what had he done? He had betrayed his teacher, his rabbi. He had betrayed the man he had been with for 3 years and been part of an inner circle that only 11 other people would ever be a part of. But more importantly, he had betrayed the Son of God. There are certain people in the Bible that when I think about them, I think I would never want to be in their shoes. Maybe those who nailed Jesus to the cross, the crowd, as the only one we'll study about in a few weeks. But I don't know anybody saying, you know, I think it'd be okay to be Judas. No, Judas is not anybody that we want to be connected with. That he has no amount of money could actually give him a clear conscience. No good works would ever get his own good works. I mean, no meritorious human works could ever give him a good conscience. The only thing that was ever going to cleanse Judas of his sin was, ironically, the blood of Christ. The only thing that will give us a clear conscience, actually give us forgiveness of sins, is the gospel of Christ. That is our redemption. Over in 1 Peter 1 verse 18, it said, knowing you were not redeemed with corruptible things like gold, silver, and gold, from your aimless conduct received by tradition from your fathers, but with the precious blood of Christ as of a lamb without blemish and without spot. And then you go down to verse 22, it says, since you have purified your souls and obeyed the truth through the spirit of sincere love of the brethren, love one another fervently with a pure heart. There are people that will try to clear the conscience in ways that are impossible because of not coming to Christ, right? To the gospel of Christ. He found that out. The last thing we can say about Judas is that, and actually 30 pieces of silver cannot save Judas from hell. When you look at the Bible, you think about this, that over Matthew 26 or 24, this Judas, Jesus speaks that the Son of Man, he goes just as written of him, but woe to that man by whom the spirit of the Son of Man is betrayed. It would have been good for that man to have never been born. I remember a number of years ago, somebody had a lesson titled, The Most Saved Man in the Bible. And it's talking about one of the two thieves on the cross with Jesus. The man that Jesus looked at him and said, today you'll be in paradise. He said, of all people in the Bible, that man there is the one that we know for sure entered paradise that day. He's the most saved man in the Bible. I thought it was a pretty good point. Well, this here is the most condemned man in the Bible as far as we look at it and we say, we know what's going to happen to him. We know his future. Oh, and to go on down, that there's not a happy ending in Jesus' life. That as you look at this page, the eternal state is known in John 17, verse 12, it says, while with them in the world, I kept them in your name, those whom you have kept, again I kept, and none of them is lost, except the son of perdition, that his scriptures might be fulfilled. That's talking about Judas saying, he's described there as son of perdition. That word means eternal destruction. It means eternal damnation. Now, I'm not saying Judas did not have repented and turned back to Jesus. What we're saying is he didn't do what he should have done. But that is the state as given to us in the Bible. And so these are some things we learn from this 30 pieces of silver. I said earlier, you know, that people will sometimes betray their country and families and companies and even God for a lot less than 30 pieces of silver. And really, when you stop thinking about it, would it have made any difference if it had been 300 pieces of silver or 3,000 or 30,000 pieces of silver? And the answer has been no. I do remember when we went to Washington, D.C. to look at the Capitol and all the museums there, to have seen the Hope Diamond. And then they put there the value of the Hope Diamond. And as you look at this huge diamond, you realize that diamond is not worth even a little bit of what your soul is worth. Your soul is worth better worth than all the wealth in the world, Jesus says. We need to make sure that we value it. And we always are doing what he says to do. I appreciate your kind attention as we just studied about 30 pieces of silver. And we have a song selected here, one of encouragement for perhaps those who have not come to Christ, have been baptized for remission of their sins, and had the hope of heaven. Or perhaps for those who have strayed from Christ and needs our prayers. If there's anything we can do to help you in your service to God, why don't you let us know as we stand and as we sing.